You guys, how important is sleep temperature? It's everything to me. And this is where Chili Pad by Sleep Me comes in. Its mission is to elevate the quality of human life through cool sleep. The Chili Pad bed cooling system is your new bedtime solution. It lets you customize your sleeping environment to your optimal temperature, ensuring you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up refreshed. Chili Pad works with your existing mattress. It's a water-based mattress topper that continuously controls your bed temperature from 55 to 115 degrees. It's designed for one or two sleepers. So if your partner likes to sleep at a different temperature, or you only need it for one side of the bed, it still works. I just put this on top of my existing mattress and voila. So whether you're dealing with night sweats or simply seeking a better night's rest, Chili Pad is here to transform your existing mattress into a sanctuary of cool, relief, and comfort. Visit www.sleep.me/FTL to get your Chili Pad and save up to $315 with code FTL. This offer is exclusively available for the Love listeners. Only for a limited time. So order it today with free shipping and try it out for 30 days. You can return it for free if you don't like it with your sleep trial. So visit www.sleep.me/FTL because every woman deserves to wake up feeling refreshed and ready to conquer the day ahead.
This episode of For the Love with Jen Hatmaker is brought to you by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. They can be big, difficult, even scary life things, and also small inconveniences that add up day after day. The thing is, when we keep them all bottled up on the inside and just try to grin and bear it, it can start to affect us and the people around us negatively. We may even isolate ourselves, which makes it even worse. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. This was the case for me when I was at the highest stress level in my life, where the stress was even having physical consequences for me. Therapy was a huge part of my healing journey to learn how to manage the stress. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapist anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/forthelove today and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/forthelove.
This episode mentions suicide and may be triggering for some listeners. Hi guys, welcome back to the Jen Hatmaker Book Club podcast. You guys, woo! I just finished this, not 15 seconds ago, my interview with this month's author, and I am smitten kitten. I'm just sitting here trying to think about what to tell you first. She's 81. She's been a career writer since almost 40. So 40 years, essentially. Just precision analysis of social constructs, of systemic injustice, of revolution, of patriarchy. Like, I didn't get to half my questions that I had for her. I was too interested in what she was talking about and what she has seen in 81 years of life. And let me just back up. Sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. I got a little jazzed, got a little juiced. This month we are reading Violetta. What a journey. It's historical fiction, which I love. I'm very drawn to those. And this one did not disappoint. It's a sweeping history, like decades long, of one woman's life. And she went through every kind of imaginable loss and struggle and transition. But her sense of humor and determination is the through line. Those are the through lines because this author particularly loves to tell complex and compelling stories about women. And I am just telling you, Violetta delivers. So today we have Isabel Allende. And she is a celebrated novelist and philanthropist. She's captivated millions of readers worldwide, not just with her storytelling, but her commitment to social causes too. So she was born in Chile, acclaimed globally since her debut novel that she wrote at age 39, The House of the Spirits. Isabel has written over 26 bestsellers. They include Daughter of Fortune, The Japanese Lover. Her books have been translated into 42 languages. She's like a global darling. So beyond writing, Isabel dedicates herself to human rights. You will pick up on this in our conversation, like her on-the-spot knowledge of global injustice and systems of injustice are just right under the skin for her because this is what she does. This is what she cares about. She has established a foundation in honor of her late daughter, Paula, and it has supported tons of nonprofits worldwide. And she's gotten so many prestigious awards, including the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And she just continues to inspire. So let me give you a quick recap on this book, just to set up the context of our conversation today. So, the main character is Violetta. She's born in 1920 in the aftermath of World War I and the onset of the Spanish flu, and then navigates a tumultuous life shaped by historic events. So, during her family's initial fortune, which is where we find her at the beginning, the Great Depression forces them into poverty, as it did so many, and then prompted a retreat to a very remote part of their South American homeland. Now, we talk about this, but she made a choice to not name any countries. So we know they're in South America, but she said these particular storylines of dictatorship and revolution, and they could have been in so many countries. So she just left it up to us, which I kind of liked. Anyway, by the way, I told her that forced relocation south, those scenes down in the South were my favorite parts of the book. Anyway, there, Violetta, she matures, of course, and she experiences love and heartbreak and the ebb and flow of wealth. And so the book is structured through letters. So she is writing to her grandson. So through her letter, all these letters, she recounts her life. And it's marked by women's rights struggles and political upheavals and the adversity of two pandemics. And so this particular narrative portrays Violetta's resilience, her passion, her humor against this sweeping backdrop of actual historical events, of course. And it is an epic tale. It is so good. I told her I finished reading it a few months ago and can still remember every detail. I can recall all the scenes that I put in. That she put into my brain that I built in my imagination. And the characters were so unforgettable, so many interesting women. I can't say enough about it. So, without any further ado, let's get into it with Isabel Allende. Isabel, welcome to the show. I'm just absolutely so glad to meet you. I love your work and your writing,
Thank
obviously.
you. Thank you, Jen. You made my day.
Your book came to me by way of another reader who went, "I think you ought to put an eyeball on this one for your book club. This is book club story." And I'm like, "All right." And she was right. It's got it all. It is sweeping landscapes and it is drama and it is romance and it is sexy and it is dangerous and there's death and you fit it all in. You fit it all into one novel and it's a page turner, absolute page turner.
Thank you.
You're an amazing writer. Okay, I'd love to talk about this for a second before we get into the book. Violetta, can you just talk a little bit about you and your background? You have such an interesting story. All the pieces of your story deeply play into your work as a novelist, as a writer, and as a creator. I wonder if you can discuss a little bit of your journey transitioning through all your various careers before ultimately pursuing writing. Do I have this right? And at age 39?
Yeah, almost 40.
Almost 40.
There's
That
always
thrills
hope.
me. Yeah, I'd love to hear more.
I think that I describe myself as a displaced person because I was born in Peru. My father abandoned my mother. I ended up living in my grandfather's house in Chile. Then my mother married a diplomat. We started traveling, saying goodbye to places because it would change countries every 2 years. So I was always on the move. I finally ended up in Chile, where I got married, had two kids, and started working as a journalist. But then we had a military coup in 1973, and very soon after the coup, I had to leave the country. And soon my husband reunited with me, and he brought the children. And we lived in Venezuela as refugees, political refugees in exile, for 13 years. You know, the average time that a refugee spends away from the place of origin is between 17 and 25 years. By the time they go back, the children have grown in another place and they won't go back. And then you go back and it's not the same country. You have lost all your friends. You have no place. I was, as I said, living in Venezuela when I came to the United States on a book tour, and I became an immigrant in the United States. By then, I had written The House of the Spirits, my first novel, and two more books. So I came here with already a career as a writer, so I could support myself and my kids. And I fell in love with an American lawyer who was introduced to me as the last heterosexual bachelor in San Francisco.
You found him. You got
I got it.
him.
And the idea was to spend with him a week and take him out of my system. But we got married and lived together for 28 years.
Wow.
In the meantime, we lived a lot of tragedy because he had three children, all of them addicted, and the three of them died for drug-related causes. My daughter died of porphyria. So it was a lot of death and tragedy in the family. But we stayed together for 28 years. And then eventually we separated in very friendly terms. He died shortly after that. He had some pulmonary problems and he died, and I inherited his dog, Perla. So now I have two dogs. And then I have written in the meantime all the time. Everything has happened. Death, tragedy, moving from one place to another, changing countries, changing partners. But the only steady thing in my life has been writing. And in the midst of all this chaos, I was able to write a book every year and a half, more or less. So I've been writing for 40 years and I have written 28 books. So I never stop. I never stop writing. Then after I separated from Willie, a couple of years later, I met a guy who heard me on the radio and he pursued me until we got married. And so now I have a third husband. I hope he will be the last. But if he dies before I do, I will probably get a fourth one.
Well,
So
we'll hold
why
the spot
not?
open. We'll see.
Yeah, why not? So I have had
Oh, wow.
romance in my life, of course. I am right who I really care for. So people send me their stories and they want me to write their lives or something. But if it's not something that connects personally to me somehow, it's very hard.
Of course.
So I end up writing sometimes historical novels, and I have no idea why I am writing about that. It has no connection to me. And then when I finish writing, I realize that there was a connection.
I mean, just based on that sort of brief summary of your life, the connections, of course, with Violetta are instantly clear, obviously clear, where so many pieces of that story came from, and you experienced so much of that yourself. And obviously, the landscape, even though you kept that vague in the book, you didn't name what country we were in, you just kind of let us imagine. But I'd like to ask you another writing question before we get into the storyline. I'm forever inspired by writers who decided to become writers a little later, rather than the ones who came straight out of their college program and started writing at age 22 or whatever. I'm more interested in women, particularly, who picked up writing as a vocation in the middle of life. It's gutsy. It's a bold move. It's a big move. It's courageous.
But let me tell you, Jen, I didn't choose it.
It shows you.
In a way, it happened. I was a journalist. I was used to the written word, but as a journalist. And then when I went into exile, I couldn't find a job as a journalist for years and years. And out I would say, despair and all these stories accumulated inside, I ended up writing my first book, which was a nostalgic journey into my family, my country, the past, everything I had lost. And that book became very successful and paved the way for my other books. But I remember that my agent said two things that I have never forgotten. She was the most famous agent in Europe for Spanish-speaking authors, Carmen Balcells. And she said to me, "Everybody can write a good first book. You put there everything you are, everything you know, all your past, everything. The writer is proven in the second book and the ones that follow." I've never forgotten that. And the other thing she said is, "You're a woman. You will have to do double or three times the effort of any man to get half the respect and recognition. But you can do it." And it is true. It has taken me a very long career of many books and a lot of effort to achieve what other people achieve much easier. Men achieve much easier. So when you say that it's a bold step to become a writer, sometimes life pushes you in a certain direction. You end up just embracing the risk.
That's right. That is an excellent segue to the next question I have for you, because you have talked about becoming a feminist before you even knew the word. And I'd love for you to share more on the ways in which, even at an early age, you became aware, you began to notice systemic injustice and unjust and unfair and unequitable treatment of women. What were you seeing and when you began creating a worldview outside of the patriarchy?
I was born in the 40s in a very Catholic, authoritarian, patriarchal, conservative family. And at a time when all the input for college and a career was for the boys in the family, I was supposed to get married and have kids. That was going to be my destiny. And that had been my mom's destiny. And she married the wrong man. And then everything went to hell because she found herself at 25 with three kids. I mean, two babies in diapers and me as a toddler. Her plan failed from the very beginning. And she ended up living with her parents and with these three kids with no money, no skill to work, no time to work if you have three kids. And what I noticed immediately in childhood, very, very early, was that my mother had nothing. The men in the family had the keys of the house, had the car, had the money, had jobs. They didn't have to say if they were coming back or at what time or if they were coming for lunch. Nobody cared. My mom, however, was stuck inside the house, and if she couldn't buy an ice cream for her kids because her father paid for school and gave us a roof over our heads, but no money. So everything was very hard for my mom. I noticed I wanted to be like my grandfather, have the freedom and the power that he had. And my mother was, because she was so unhappy and depressed, she was sick all the time. So she appeared in my eyes as very frail, as very, very vulnerable. And I couldn't protect her. I was just too young. And then she married my stepfather, who was a wonderful man, but very macho and very authoritarian in the old school. That's the way it was then. And so I clashed against him innumerable times. And that only fortified my idea that I wanted to have a life that was different, but then it sort of expanded to the idea that why only me? All women should have this. And then I discovered in my teenage years that I wasn't a lunatic. I wasn't alone in this. There was a movement out there that was called the Women's Lib, and I'd never heard of it. And then I started to get more input. I could read badly, but I could read in English. So I started reading a few authors from England and from the United States and realizing that what they were saying was so smart, so reasonable, that this women's movement would have to succeed in a matter of, I don't know, 10 years maybe. So I thought I will be part of this struggle and we will succeed. I never expected to be 81 and still in the same battlefield.
That is, as you well know, Violetta as a novel raises so many important conversations and discussions. We're having those in my book club right now because, of course, as you know, as we speak, women's autonomy and our rights and our freedoms are being rolled back on the daily right now. And we all just keep looking at each other going, how are we still here? How is this our battle? We thought this was our grandmother's battle, and we're going to have to stage our own revolution.
This is how the patriarchy works. The patriarchy works by having women and people who are powerless in a submissive position. So that few people who are usually white males that have the power control the society, control religion, control finances, control the military, everything. And so women with incredible effort achieve rights in many places, and they are taken away as soon as they are not vigilant or something happens. The occupation, poverty, famine, an earthquake, financial crisis, not to mention fundamentalism or terrorism. Look what happened to women in Afghanistan. For 20 years, they were lawyers and doctors. And in 24 hours, they were back in their houses in a burqa. They can't even get out without a male companion that is part of the family. And they are stoned to death. So we can lose everything. And young women your age have to be very attentive, because right now your abortion rights are being taken away. Soon the pill will be taken away if you are not. Be careful how you vote.
Yeah, that's right. Shout out to Astepro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples. Guys, it's already allergy season in Texas. My yard is in full bloom and all the things are in the air. So I decided allergies will not win this year. So I tried Astepro. It has improved my nasal allergy symptoms and it's faster, bro. Astepro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It is the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astepro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astepro delivers full prescription strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing. So get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astepro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can Astepro and go, you guys, today. Astepro allergy.com. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies. Astepro and go. Summer is coming, and so is my much anticipated Meet Camp. The past few summers, I've been taking some time to travel alone. It's time for me to read and explore small towns and meet new people. And this year, I'm thrilled to have a new way to plan my adventures. Viator is a tool you can use to plan and book travel experiences around the world. The Viator app and website make it easy to explore 300,000 plus travel experiences so you can discover what's out there, no matter where you're traveling or what you're interested in. For my trip, I'm considering a wine tasting event or maybe a sunset sail. I've been reading real traveler reviews to get insider information from people who've already done the activities. Viator also offers 24/7 customer service, so you know you'll get support at any hour if your plans change. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find the perfect travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Going back to Violetta, my mother died when she was 98. She was born during the influenza pandemic and in 1920, around that time. And so if she had lived a few more months, she would have been 100 years old and she would have lived a century. And that was a very important century, the 20th century, for human rights, for women's rights, for politics. It was a time of fascism, of war, of dictatorship, of communism, of horrible massacres, genocides, all kinds of stuff happened. And my mother was a witness to all that. And she was smart and ironic and lucid. And so in her letters, she describes the century. When she died, many people who knew her, especially women my age, who knew her very well, said, you have to write your mom's story. And I really tried, but I was too close. Literature needs distance and irony. And I couldn't have it because I was still mourning her and I was so close to her. So I decided to write what she had seen that century through the eyes of a woman like her, with one difference. Violeta, from very young age, can support herself, and my mother could not. So the big difference between the character and the person who inspired it is financial independence.
Independence, that's right.
Because there is no feminism without financial independence.
That's right. That's one of the locks on the gate. Obviously, one of the biggest locks on the gate is financial autonomy. And so I love that you made that choice for Violeta early on, that she would have financial freedom, which gave her all the other freedoms as well. And you, of course, you had her born in 1920, same as your mom.
Yeah. My mom would have been such a different person if she could have supported herself.
Certainly.
The way the society is constructed around the patriarchy is that women in their reproductive years are trapped by motherhood and by the domestic chores, so that even if they have a career, it's a very slow career compared to the career of any man. In the case of a writer like myself, if a male writer, any of the male writers that you can name, works at home, he has a room of his own, nobody makes any noise when he's writing, his work is sacred. I mean, he served lunch, his clothes are washed and ironed. A woman needs to do all that. She doesn't have a room of her own, and she writes in the spur of the moment when she has a free moment. So how can you compare the conditions? Unless you choose to be a single woman, which is not easy in this society, because a single man has a much better chance.
Certainly. And said in the time frame that you wrote this novel in, it was even harder.
It was impossible. My mother could have never done what I have done, to the point that at some, my mother was terrified of my feminist views, because she said, yeah, she said from very early on, you're going to get so much aggression. You are going to be trampled to death. Don't, if you think this way, shut up. Do whatever you want, but do it without noise. I said, Mom, you cannot do a revolution without noise. A silent revolution doesn't work. And later on, when she was old, and I was old too, we were talking one day, and she said, remember that I told you that you would have to pay a very high price for feminism? I said, yeah. And she said, do you think you have paid a high price? I said, no, I think it has been really on sale, the whole thing, really cheap. Because what I have acquired, it was worth the trouble, every minute of it.
Yes, exactly.
And my mother says, I know that. She knew it.
She did.
But she couldn't do it herself.
Nor could she have probably envisioned it until you lived it and you plowed up that new road that really wasn't even available to her as a path. I can imagine she just probably didn't have an imagination for what you would have been able to accomplish in this worldview with the sort of revolutionary spirit.
Because I was born 20 years after her, and everything had changed.
You mentioned very briefly, but I'd love to hear you talk a little bit more about it, your mother's letters, because that obviously also factored in heavily to one of the literary devices, the chief literary device of Violeta, which is that she told this story through letters. And of course, this has a really precious and meaningful connection to you and your mom. And I'd love to hear you talk about that a little bit.
As I told you before, my mother was married to a diplomat. So for a while, she traveled with the kids, but then the kids had to go to college and whatever, no? So she sent us back to Chile, And she kept on traveling with my stepfather. I was 16 when they were in Turkey at the
16.
time. Can you imagine at the time you couldn't talk on the phone like long
Sure.
distance unless it was a war or something? You couldn't. There was no email, none of it. So, and the snail mail would take 2 months or a month at least.
Gosh.
But my mother would write to me every single day. And sometimes I would receive 30 letters. And I wrote to her every day. So it was not a conversation. There were these monologues in which we were telling each other every day. And when I came to live in the United States in 1987, we kept that always because we were always separated. And except for a few years in Venezuela, we were always writing every day. When I came to the States in 1987, I started collecting her letters and copy of the ones I sent her. And then email was invented and my mother went crazy. She would write to me two or three times a day. And so as I started collecting it, I put them in chronological order in boxes. I can show you a box if
Wow.
you want. I have
Yeah.
in each box contains between 600 and 800 letters because it's
Oh
her
my.
letters and my letters. And
Wow.
if you add the day,
Yeah.
the years is around 24,000 letters.
It's just bananas. What a
It's amazing.
treasure.
And so if you ask me what happened in your life on July 10, 1990, I go to the garage, take out the box, and there it is, with the emotion of the day. And now that at my age, I am reading and realize that I don't remember 90% of what is written in. It's because life goes so fast.
It
And
sure does.
if we don't keep a record of life, it's blown by the wind.
You're right. And you were recording the dailiness of life, literally every day. And those pieces come and go so quickly that without a record of it, there's whole years I can barely remember. When I think back on it, I can't pull up two meaningful memories.
Yeah. What happened in your life last Tuesday?
Exactly. Who knows? So, I mean, you have an archive that is, it's your legacies. It's her legacy and it's yours.
Yeah. So I got a lot from the letters to write the book.
Oh, I'm sure you did. Obviously, as you're talking about your mother, I'm hearing all the pieces of the novel that certainly, if she wasn't the exact inspiration, a lot of it was patterned after her story. Certainly, I want to hear you talk about Violetta. Novelists are so fascinating to me, and your characters come to you in all different manners. I've talked to novelists, so many of them, and no two novelists do it the same way. Their inspirations are different, their characters develop differently. I've heard novelists say, "Oh, this character came to me fully formed. I knew her. It's like she introduced herself to me, and I was just the conduit to write her story." Others say it was more of an amalgamation and a developing process. How did Violetta come to you? Did she come to you in bits and pieces? And was she your first character that you started with?
Well, I have had the experience of having a character come fully formed from the beyond, from the past that has just appeared. And other times I build a character slowly, piece by piece. But in this case, it was just my mom. So I described my mom's childhood. I described the person she was. I didn't have to invent much. I had to pick up all these pieces and put them together like a puzzle. But everything else was there. For example, the characters of the men in Violeta's life are very much like my life in that. I borrowed from my own life. I was married. My first husband was like her first husband. A good guy, but so boring.
Boring. Yes. You wrote his boring character so perfectly that
So
I
boring.
just thought, run, run out, go have an adventure. This guy and his family are going nowhere, man. They're going to stay on that lake for their whole lives.
And the second wife was this actor, this person who is a bad boy. And He's a bad boy, and that's my second husband, pretty much. Of course, with the difference that he wasn't ever violent or disrespectful to me, because I would have not put up with that for more than 1 minute. The first time that he raised his voice, he realized he could never do that again.
Well done.
Never. So that charm, that debonair thing, risk-taking and not reliable and not consistent.
That's right.
Yeah. And
He
then
wrote
the
that beautifully.
yeah, and then the last character in her life is pretty much like my husband now. But I didn't know him. When I wrote the book, I didn't know Roger. So then Roger appeared, and just by coincidence, it was like the third husband.
What do you know? You manifested him.
Yeah, sort of.
That is fascinating. I so enjoyed that particular story arc. The loves, the men who she loved, the men in her life, from duty and sort of obligation, what was expected to her, to like heat, pizzazz, razzle dazzle, just all the. I loved that you had them in bed on the first day they ever met. That was just so outrageous a choice, so out of bounds. She hadn't done anything like it. That was so fun to read. I appreciated her meandering romance and what that looked like, and then how ultimately she was so independent, even if the Playboy and his charms quit working. And I just that was that part I thought it was just masterful.
You know, it was easy for her to get rid of the first husband. She didn't have children with him,
That's
and
right.
he was so boring.
So boring.
But the second one, he was the father of her kids, so it was much harder. And I think it's much harder to get rid of a very charming and seductive guy.
Well, he stuck
What do
around
you
for a
think?
really long time.
Yeah, it took a long time.
But even as she sort of befriended his newer girlfriend, it had stopped having that magnetic effect on her, where she would just lose her mind with desire and just acquiescing to whatever it was he wanted. He didn't have any rules because, like you said, it was good to be a man back then. I enjoyed that. You write complicated characters really well, particularly the women. I love Violetta wrote to her grandson, "I think you'll see that my life story is worthy of a novel because of my sins more than my virtues."
Of course, a
And
virtuous woman has no story.
that's not as exciting. There's not much to tell there. I did what I was expected to do.
The bad women who make history.
That's exactly right. Were there any parts of the book that for you were hard to write? Or that you really labored around, or maybe you went one way for a while and then it became clear you needed to go a different direction. Sometimes there's always a portion or two in any given novel that is just a little rockier than some of the others.
In this case, I don't remember that that happened. Because, as I said, it was layout for me. Even the death, it was the death of my mom, exactly. The part that I suffered, because I always do when I write about that, was at the time of terror when her son disappears. That is very hard because I lived it, you know. I lived in Chile during the first few months of the dictatorship, and I saw that. And for a parent, to have someone disappear is worse than death, because you don't know what happened, and you will always be waiting and always be hoping. So that was hard.
Yeah, that was hard to read also. And knowing that she didn't know what had happened and she was just sitting year after year in her grief and confusion, that was real palpable as from a reader's standpoint.
And then the other part that was for me easy to write because I also lived it, but hard to, it's a hard part of the book, is the daughter's addiction.
Yes.
When she sees her, how vulnerable. And that happened in Willie's family. His daughter, the character in the book, is an exact portrait of Willie's daughter, Jennifer, who died.
Before I knew that, before I had read that piece of your personal story, when we were in book club having a discussion, A lot of us said, this is an author who she has had experienced addiction somewhere in her life or her family. It's too true. The way that you wrote it was too clear, too painful, and too messy without a tidy ending. I'm like, this is a real story that found its way into the novel. And I'm sorry that you've experienced that so much in your life. Addiction is, well, nobody really understands it until they have a family member who's an addict.
It can destroy a family also.
That's right, and does.
Because the mother, so often the mother and the father, never give up. They never give up. They're all hoping against all odds that things will turn around. And over and over and over, you are disappointed and hurt. And poor Willie, he had to live that with three children.
Yeah, I don't know how to even process the levels of grief and sorrow
and
that
anger
that
also.
probably was,
And
and
also
anger. Oh, yeah,
angry.
that's right.
Because you get angry at the person, but you get angry at yourself because you can't let go, and you know that the person is lying. You know that you will be fooled again, and you still do it. So it's a form of addiction on your part also.
That's right. That's right. I appreciated you including that. That was a layer that felt meaningful in the story and made everybody so human. And how about outside of Violetta, who did you like writing for? Who, what character did you really enjoy when you were in the scenes writing for that particular person?
I love the villains.
I love to hear it.
I love the villain. Because without a villain, the story doesn't go forward. The villains push the story. So that's why I so loved Julian, because he was such a bastard.
Oh,
so
he's the worst. So charming. I could literally see him in my brain.
So I loved writing about him. And then there are characters that to me are endearing, and they stay with me, like Torito. Torito, who was this gentle giant, probably with some mental problems, but it's not clear if he's just uneducated or if he's autistic or what is it? It doesn't matter. And how he finds his life in the landscape, in the forest, in the land, really. And he was totally lost in the city, and the loyalty, it's the kind of character that I always love.
I'm obsessed. My friend Chelsea was wearing the softest cashmere sweater in that perfect weight for spring. She told me it was under $50, made by a fantastic company named Quince. And I could shop from my laptop, which is my dream. So I immediately ordered the cashmere tee. Now I want it in every color. Quince offers staple pieces like Chelsea's Mongolian cashmere sweater, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, classic like 14 karat gold jewelry. You can upgrade your wardrobe with luxury essentials, but unbeatable prices. You guys, seriously, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And I know what you're thinking, but Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible practices and premium fabrics, which I love. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/hatmaker for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/hatmaker to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/hatmaker.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
My favorite scenes and sections of the whole novel were down there on the farm, with the rural community. Obviously, the juxtaposition coming from the opulent big house with all the money and kind of losing it all. It was such a hard swing to be in such a humble place, so remote, so far off, like the last train stop, and so out of pocket for what they had grown up with servants and all of it. But then for that place to be so nurturing and so nourishing. It saved them. And of course, I love that Violetta loved it. I was so pleased that she was not, how can I get back to the city? Of course, she went back to the city, but not because she hated that place or those people. And that was always so dear to her. And something about that, I read the book months ago, and still right this second as I'm talking to you, I can see that place in my brain that I constructed while I was reading all those chapters, what it looked like, what it smelled like, what the people were like. I loved that part. Did you have a real rural piece of your own story that played in there that you patterned that after?
The story of the father that kills himself because he's broke, that happened to my grandfather. My grandfather's father, that would be my great-grandfather, was a wealthy landowner, and he started losing money in horses and this and that, and he was a terrible administrator. And when the crash in the big depression started, he found himself without money, and he shot himself in a Catholic country where suicide is so taboo that a body cannot be buried in a Catholic cemetery. You have to be buried outside the cemetery. So they hid it and they made it look like an accident, like a hunting accident. But the result of that was that the family was left in poverty. And my grandfather had to go to the deep south and start from nothing. He ended up owning sheep in Patagonia, and he made his life. But with great effort, he started working at 14 in the deep, deep south of Chile and Argentina. So that's where I got the inspiration for that. And that is the part of the country, of my country, Chile, that I love the most. Of course, if I would ever go back to live in Chile, it would be there, for sure.
Oh, I felt that. The way that you wrote it, it was so loving. So generous.
You asked me why, or you suggested why I did not mention the country. I didn't do that either in The House of the Spirits, my first novel, and I haven't done it in several books, because sometimes the story can be placed anywhere. It makes it more universal. So this story could happen in Uruguay, in Argentina, in Mexico, in many places.
Yeah, I actually liked that. I liked that choice.
You can place it wherever you want.
Right. And to your point, revolution and dictatorships and patriarchy, those are everywhere. Those are worldwide.
No, and at the time, they were all over Latin America. When I left my country in the 70s, half the population of Latin and Central America were living under horrible dictatorships, all of them supported by the CIA, by the way.
Right. Right. You included all that. That was part of our history, of course, you know, that we didn't learn here in America. We had to dig for that later as adults to find out all the ways that America was complicit in atrocities around the world and, you know, decade after decade. So, and that's happening right now. That's not,
yeah, that's
that
happening
never ended.
Right now.
That's right. It never ended. I just cannot let you go before we talk about the nanny because I loved her. I loved her. I loved her so much. What a fun character that you wrote in. Just
she's based on a real person too.
She has to be.
Yeah.
Tell me about her.
Okay. My parents had a housekeeper for 41 years. She's my sister. Really, I love her more than I love my brothers.
Yes.
We are all the time in touch. She was from a very humble origin. She wore shoes for the first time when she was a teenager. She could read the titles of the newspapers, but she couldn't read a story. She couldn't follow the story. Her literacy was minimal. However, she had an incredible memory. I'm talking in past, but she's alive. And I just talked to her because I needed the recipe for flan. She lives in the south of Chile, by the way. So, and we talk on the phone for recipes. You can imagine.
Of course, I can imagine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she's exactly like that person, like the nanny.
The best. Just the best.
Yeah, boss. She was the boss. Yeah.
The authority.
The authority.
She just walked in with, really hadn't earned it. It didn't even deserve it yet, but just, this is what we're doing. I will wrangle this feral child into some sort of decent child who can sit at a dinner table and feed herself, was just delightful and offered this kind of respite from some of just the hard family moments. You know right when to push and pull on a story, when we need some relief, when we needed a little bit of love and romance. Of course, I loved her. You know, her same-sex relationship for back then, which would have been an impossible situation as well.
Yeah. The aunts, you mean the aunt?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and the aunts, for sure. I mean, the strong aunts, too. You had so many strong women in the story. The women always carried the day. So we're embroiled in a debate in book club over who we love the most. You gave us too many women to love. And we love and respect them all for their grit and how they found their own strength in such a patriarchal world. It was just a delight to read, just an absolute delight. Okay. I'm not allowed to let you go without asking you what you are working on right now. We're all looking forward to reading whatever comes off your fingertips next. We're fans.
I finished another novel. It's a historical novel that happens in 1891. And it's the story of a woman journalist. There were very few of those that started in San Francisco. She was American, the bastard daughter of a Chilean aristocrat, but born in America. And she works as a journalist for the San Francisco Examiner. All my historical fiction is based on real, real history. So I researched very carefully. And so she starts working there. And then there is a revolution in Chile in 1891. And she goes as a war correspondent, which was also very unusual for a woman. So we see the war through her eyes. And we see her, how she, from being a frivolous young woman here, experiences the war and changes and ends up in the south of Chile. It's done. It's in the process of translation now. So as soon as the translation is ready, my American editor reads it and then we finesse it and then it's out.
So it'll probably, will it come out next year?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to read it. I love your characters. I like the way that you write historical fiction. It's all in there. It feels real because it is real, feels true because it was true. But then you just layer on so much nuance through your characters and the story and the love and the drama of it all.
I see my life like a roller coaster of stuff, you know, tragedy and success and love and losses, everything mixed. But I wouldn't want it any other way.
I want
an interesting life. I don't want a happy life. I want an interesting life.
I like that. Do you just plan to write novels all the way?
For as long as I have a brain. But you know, the brain starts to go. 2 days ago, for the first time, I couldn't remember the name of a friend, a person I love.
Yes.
Unfortunately, his name is very uncommon. He's called Carter. But I could not for my life remember the name. And he has written a book. So I could go to my bookshelf and find the book and read the name. But I decided, no, I need to remember. It tormented me for 24 hours. And finally, I remembered. But then I know, you know, my first senior moment.
Oh, well, listen, if you have made it to 81 and that's your first one, I turned 50 this year and I will walk into a room and have no idea why I'm there. Why did I come in
50?
Here?
How can you be 50? You look 25.
That's cute. And I will accept that. But I
is
turned,
it a filter?
This is my 50.
Is it a filter that you have on your screen or something?
I don't know what it is. I think it's my daily glass of wine with dinner. I credit that with my longevity.
Well, me too, but it's not working that way, let me tell you.
Well, I will tell you right now that I aspire to look like you, to be like you. I love that you are still writing and creating and you're still making up whole worlds. You're such a prolific writer. I mean, an unbelievable pace you have kept up all these years. So very, very last question, because I don't even know if you have time for this, but most of us who write also read, and we would just love to know anything that you're reading lately that has really caught your fascination or something that you think this is definitely worth recommending.
Okay, I have it here.
Okay, good.
James.
Okay.
By Percival Everett.
Ooh, that cover is fascinating.
And he's a Pulitzer Prize finalist. Remember the story of Huckleberry Finn?
Sure. Oh, I know about this book.
Yeah. So it's told from the point of view of the slave that was
yes.
called in the, but here it's called James. And it is the irony of it, the sarcasm of it, the way the description of slavery and of the whites, and it's fantastic. I'm loving it.
Well, I'm very glad to hear your recommendation on James. I just read a review about that book and thought I got to get my hands on it. I've got to read this. This is going to be a fascinating take. Thanks for being on today. I am so happy to have met you. You
Me
are
too.
Just everything and more that I thought you were going to be. I just admire you so much.
And please don't flatter me.
No, I will flatter you and you will receive it and you deserve it. You have absolutely earned it. So thank you for your time today and for giving us such a beautiful story that has created so many amazing conversations. I'll never forget it. Never.
Thank you. Thank you. Take care. And thank you for reading.